Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. Looks like we're going to be starting, we'll go a little bit over tonight, but I guess our official startup date for the two-hour show is going to be next week. And we've got some great guests, and I'm going to have a co-host to help bring in the feminine energy, and she's a powerhouse, Dana, and it should get real interesting. So I'll probably go for the first hour and then turn it over to her for the second hour, and we'll just see what happens after that. Or we might even work together. We're still in the planning stages of that. I wanted to talk tonight about this global revolution going on that we're not really hearing about it, but unless you're on the internet, then you're hearing about it. But in the mainstream news, we're just not hearing what's really going on. And we're not seeing the magnitude of what's happening as far as the New York Square, you know, the revolution going on there, and all the people gathering there, as well as all the major cities. I'll have to put that up on the site later, but I want to put Keith Olbermann's response to that. I wish I could play that over the air, but I'm not sure if I'm allowed to, but amazing. Well, he just laid it out and talked about what the demands are and what the people are just fed up with. And the bottom line is they're just fed up with the pure deception. But anyway, you know, I always figure there's no accident. So wherever those words were, might have had a meeting with somebody. What's interesting, though, is that we're looking at this. A while back there, I was talking about how it's just not getting coverage. I was looking at the revolution going on in Spain, and it looks like the entire country was out in the streets. Just unbelievable. And, you know, Greece is just saying, forget it. We're not playing this game anymore. And they shut down the whole country, basically, and went on strike. And, you know, this is happening all around the world. In Ireland, same thing. Everybody is saying is we are fed up with the globalist elite. We're fed up with the wars. We're fed up with funding these wars. We're fed up with the total fraud in the banking system. We're fed up with being enslaved to a program that no longer serves us. And all of the demands that these people are talking about are very, very equitable. I mean, it's what they're saying is just right on. You can't argue with it, and the time has come. And my feeling is this fits right into this ninth wave of unity consciousness that's coming in. I've had a lot of people get really upset saying, how can you attribute this chaos to the ninth wave? The ninth wave is all about unity consciousness, and it's about love, and people don't understand, whenever you have an influx of energy, of higher consciousness and energy, whatever you want to call it, there's always chaos. When the energy comes in, if you understand physics or science, it's whenever you have a higher frequency come in, the lower frequency has to rise up, and you'll see a pattern that it'll go from a nice harmonic pattern to chaos and then to a new pattern. And that's through semantics and other things that you can check into. But it's just the way it is. Before the new world comes in, usually the old world falls or is in the process of being completely restructured. And that's the chaos part. But it's not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. It means that things are changing. They are moving in the right direction. So we need to look at that. You know, when I see people standing up for their rights and for their sovereignty and saying, I'm no longer going to be a slave, I'm not going to be your indentured servant, I have a right to live a thoroughly loving, joyous, abundant life in freedom and prosperity, those are God-given rights, and that's what people are standing up for. So, you know, we have to look at what's really going on in this country. You know, experts are saying we're going to be moving into like a 40% unemployment rate, and that's the direction we're going. There's no jobs out there. There's no income out there. There's no money out there to pay all these exorbitant debts that they're creating. You know, where are they going to pay for all this stuff? There's no way it can keep going forward the way it has. It's completely unsustainable. So you know, basically what we're seeing is hey, wait a second, maybe we don't need these people to, you know, create the manufactured lack and the planned obsolescence and all the other programs going on and that are totally destroying the planet, you know, polluting it and polluting the water, the skies, you know, everything. You know, maybe we don't need all these wars. Maybe we don't need all this nonsense altogether. Maybe we can just pull our power back and say, enough's enough. You know, you derived your power from us, and we're not going to play this game anymore. And that's what we're seeing on a global effect right now. People are just fed up with the system. They've lost their homes. They've lost their jobs. They're fed up with just insensitive hierarchies that continue to lie and make promises, and meanwhile they're going down the toilet. And that seems to be happening, you know, all around the planet right now. So basically, that's going to be a lot of the topic that we're going to be covering is this call to freedom and this shift in consciousness that's happening and tied into the ninth wave. And we can discuss a lot of these different things, the sovereignty movement, who you really are. All of these things we can bring up in today's show. So basically that's what I want to do in keeping up with the times. And also, too, we wanted to have call-ins, too, later on the show so people can also voice their opinions and share whatever they want to share concerning, you know, what's happening on the planet and maybe some remedies or how we can shift the consciousness and the energy and make these changes maybe a little more gracefully or however they need to be made. So anyway, I believe we've got Tom on the main line. Let me see if Tom, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you. Got you on.
Now, Tom, how are we doing tonight?
Doing great. Tom is on the 100th Monkey with Ramon, and he's here at the ranch, and we just had some wonderful people. We had Dean Clifford on Skype and Spencer and, you know, some other people sharing their information all about the sovereignty movement. And a lot of this stemmed around my own experiences and troubles with the so-called authorities, you might say, who have decided that we do not have, you know, the right to privacy, freedom of speech, or the right to practice our spiritual beliefs, and the right to assembly at my own ranch here. They decided those are bad things, you know. So anyway, after trying to deal with them through all the different avenues and trying to cooperate with them on every level possible, we found out there was no. They never did want to cooperate, and we found out their true intentions, which is to close the ranch down. So we're taking a whole different approach to that now. And it's kind of amazing what's coming up is realizing that, wait a second, did these guys really have the authority? Did they have jurisdiction? Like, who are these guys? And where do I stand in this corporation, you know, that is coming after me? So we can talk a lot about that and maybe bring Tom on to get his two cents in on what he's experienced.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just finding it absolutely amazing, James, that I'm sitting here. You know, the name of my show is Monkey Radio, which the 100th Monkey concept is basically how consciousness spreads. And I've sat back and looked and watched the world change and watch the consciousness flow across the planet as far as people standing up and saying, no, this is not right. I am not going to do this. We're not going to do this any longer. We need to fix it. And it's carrying so much more power because they're doing it with a different consciousness than created the problem. They're coming, people are coming towards this whole situation with a peaceful intent. They just want it fixed. They don't want to go out, hang anybody or burn any. Well, some people might want to, but and some people may deserve that, quite frankly. But that's that would be their own path. Anyways, no, I'm watching these things change, and I mean, it started with what we're seeing now in New York and San Francisco and Portland and all over the country, in our country, where you know this kind of stuff is kind of unheard of. I mean, we're used to seeing these big uprisings over in the Middle East and all these other places where the people take to the streets. Well, we're taking to the streets here now, and we're doing it with right in our pocket. When I say right, I'm talking about we have behind us truth. We have us the essence and energy of justice. I mean, there needs to be balance here. And that consciousness of people becoming aware of the fact that things have to change and being aware of the fact that we have power. One single little person has just as much power as every other little person out there. So we're coming to that realization and understanding that we can make that change. We can make that difference. We're stepping out and we are changing the world. We are making things right. We are fixing what has been broken for so long. So I'm just really excited to watch all this unfold. You see things like, even into the UFO field, it's the consciousness of it as more people are becoming aware of it, and more people are having those experiences and doing things like we do here at SETI, where we actually on a daily basis, there's some sort of contact going on with some other force, some energy that is besides what we would term normal. And as more and more people are experiencing those things, that is joining into our conscious stream of our, I don't really like to call it the group consciousness, but it doesn't really accurately portray the way I see it, but it is joining the consciousness field, and it's starting to flash its light quite brightly. So more and more people are joining in that, and they're realizing that, hey, there is something to this. And this is, I mean, I'm seeing this on all sorts of different levels, you know, with the UFO, the spirituality is huge. I'm seeing a huge influx of people who are waking up to the fact that we are not these flesh bags that we walk around in. We are something, we are something that is not this machine that we are occupying. We are eternal beings. And that is becoming, that's joining in with force into that conscious stream. And more and more and more people are picking up on it. And this all this, everything is tying together right now. We've got the whole Mayan calendar. We've got the yugas. We've got all these different prophecies from ages gone past that all foretold all these things. And now we're watching all this stuff manifest. It's not necessarily manifesting in the ways that so many people foresaw it, you know, there's a lot of doom and gloom on these prophecies, but they're, I'm still seeing a lot of this stuff manifest in the world, but in just a slightly different form than what a lot of people anticipated. But I'm just excited about it, if you can't tell.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of information here just directly from on high, you might say, and different masters have been chiming in, and some of our ancient ancestors who are returning right now, such as the Pleiadians, the Andromedans, the Arcturians, the Syrians, the Orion Council of Light, all of these beings coming in right now have been talking about these events, and they've been hitting it right on the button, and basically what they told me is that, you know, everything was going to bust loose, you know, between the beginning of September and all the way through till November, where we see that just the total end of tyranny and the separation game. And what's interesting is the information coming from the Pleiadians. It totally aligns with the Mayan calendar. Every time they give us information, it lines up perfectly with the Mayan calendar. And I think it was Carlos Barrios, who's one of the Mayan elders, actually said the Mayan calendar actually came from the Pleiadians, that they came from the Pleiades. That's their origin, which is quite interesting. So if Carl Coleman is correct, and I do believe he is, because the dates they give us correspond with his dates as the ending of the Mayan calendar in October 28th, that would totally correspond with all the other information we're getting. So we're getting information from a lot of different sources, and but they all seem to be coming to the same conclusion.
Yeah, it's definitely we're definitely seeing a lot of parallels to all these. In particular, I'm watching the waves that Kellerman and Barbahan Clough put out, the way their descriptions of the waves and how the consciousness is developing, and they're spot on so far. I mean, it's pretty amazing. You got to understand that we are kind of limitless with what we can do with our consciousness. And the big pattern here is that we're going to come to a point where we were going to evolve consciously, and that was foreseeable a long time ago. A lot of the details that weren't really foreseeable because of the free will aspect that changes things as things progress, but the basic game plan of what we're here to do, to learn, to grow, to become who we are in a conscious level in this realm, on this planet, with this program we call the human being, we are destined, so to say, to actually wake up and become whole. Right now we're so fragmented. Our consciousness is so spread out all across the planet. There's so many people that are picking up really good parts of this and really good parts of that, really good parts of this. And with the development of the internet here in the last 30 years, all these pieces are starting to come together, where people have had the time now to do the research, do the internal work, do the external work, and start to bring all these fragmented pieces of our consciousness back together. And we're starting to get a concise and a fuller picture of who and what we are. And this whole thing going on right now with our governments and with all the protests that are going on and all the turmoil in the world, this is all just a result of our consciousness waking up. It's uncomfortable I'm speaking for me personally. When I first started the wake-up process, it was uncomfortable for me to look in the mirror and for me to really look at who I was and is that really me? Are those the actions that I take in my life, are those really who I am? So it was an uncomfortable process that I went through, and I went through my own inner battles. I'm seeing that same sort of thing being reflected in the world right now. Our group consciousness, if you want to call it that, is actually starting to look in the mirror and seeing itself and not liking what it's seeing, and it's going through that internal battle with its consciousness to work these things out. And I see this as all a matter of the process of awakening, and we're seeing it now on the global scale with all of humanity.
Now, I was reading an article just recently. I sent it over my list, and this one woman was talking about the shifts and changes. And she had this interesting concept. She said the light hurts. And I really understand what she's talking about, because the more you engage the higher consciousness and energy, the more you have to deal with your wounds and traumas and wrong conclusions from past experience. Any of these little programs that you've had dealt to you, and actually, eventually you come to the conclusion that this whole program right now, where it's completely dysfunctional, it's completely broken. I don't think it can be fixed. We just need to let go of it and come up with something else. And so that's what I'm seeing is going down right now, is that people have been trying to fix it. They're trying to get it going and trying to transform it. But it's just the greed and the insensitivity and the separation game, at the top is just so thick, and so they're just such control freaks. I don't know what it's going to take other than a full-blown revolution, you know, to take that down. But be that as it may, what I see is that I believe we're going into the seventh day on Tuesday. Monday's the end of the 6th, 9th, I think it is, and then we're going into the seventh day. I might be wrong on that. But this is the last 18-day cycle of the Mayan calendar, in which each day or with each wave, there's a time compression. And so you experience hundreds of years of evolution in a very short time. And now, who knows? I mean, it could be what would normally take thousands of years might happen in just these 18 days. So I'm expecting miracles. Yeah, I mean, I'm expecting huge transformations during this process on every level. And I know the forces behind these energies that are coming in, and they are so powerful. And so it's like the source itself is saying, you know, game over, it is finished. Now we're going to play the next game. We're going to go to the next level where everybody does live in unity and in harmony with each other and the planet. And anything that can't match that frequency or that program is going to, you know, have an experience, which is going to be a pretty heavy one, depending on how much they want to continue to play the old game.
Exactly. If they want to hold on to it really tight, it's going to hurt really bad when it gets pulled away.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, your show.
When they're forced to give it up, it's going to hurt worse the longer they hang on to it.
You know, speaking of monkeys, you know, your show, The 100th Monkey, and it brings to mind the monkey trap. And I bring up this all the time because it is one of the best examples of how they catch monkeys, that they actually tether a coconut down, tie it down, drill a hole in it, and they fill the coconut with rice, and the monkey sticks his hand in. And he's too greedy to let the rice go. And so the hunter or whoever wants to grab the monkey just comes up and clubs it or throws a net over it, depending on what they need. And end of story. And it seems like our whole society is in that experience right now. We're holding on to a structure that doesn't work, that's totally dysfunctional and not in our highest and best good, but we think it does provide security, which it really doesn't. It's one of the biggest insecurities you can ever, you know, because they are behind all the wars and all the other, you know, programs. It's just a bunch of predators and parasites. But, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, I think the vast majority has pulled their hand out of the monkey trap, and they're just saying, we're done. And that's what we're seeing.
Yep, and those ones that can't quite unclench their fist inside that coconut, those are the boys that it's going to, they're the ones that are, it's going to hurt really bad when the hunters actually decide to check that trap.
Yeah, I think the guys that upstairs that are pouring champagne on the protesters, they're the ones that are so, they've got two hands and two feet in the monkey trap, and they don't realize that what's behind this, the force and the energy behind this. I think they're going to have a real hard time getting themselves unhooked from that monkey trap.
I agree 100%. So, okay, well, I'm going to back out of here and let Daryl jump in. Let me plug my show for this week. 100th Monkey Radio at 4 o'clock on Sundays, Station 2. We have Tom Campbell on this week. Should be a great show. So,
who is Daryl. Tom? Can you give us a preview on who Tom is? So,
well, Tom Campbell is one of the founding members of the Monroe Institute. Bob Monroe, mm-hmm. who set up the big out-of-body travel place back in, where was it, Kentucky or someplace like that. Anyways, they set up a laboratory to see if they could get some empirical evidence on out-of-body travel, on where being able to project our consciousness out of the body. And they did some absolutely amazing work gathering empirical data that proves that out-of-body travel is real, and that other dimensions and other reality sets exactly like this one here, well, not necessarily exactly like this one, but similar to this one here, the cosmos is just packed full of other worlds and other planets, and how travel from these places, from where our certain consciousness is situated at this time, projecting that consciousness into all these different places in this different realms is as easy as a thought. So he wrote a book called My Big Toe, and I would urge anybody to pick that thing up if they really want to get a good grasp of the fundamental workings of our reality. So,
great. So, okay. Yeah, they established their own little airport there where you can fly for free.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to go through TSA or anything. Just like
That's right.
Hop into a little booth and take off.
It's good stuff. All right, James, good talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, James, this is Daryl.
Hey, Daryl, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I actually also want to plug Tom's show because Dr. Thomas Campbell's work, he's actually a quantum physicist who has the empirical training, so to speak, as a physicist, and yet he also has the experiential training of leaving his body, you know, hundreds of times. And so he has actually experienced all of these worlds out there, and then when he comes back, he was actually classifying these worlds from a physicist point of view. So My Big Toe refers to theory of everything. So it's his big theory of everything. And, you know, maybe as a precursor, watching Dr. Thomas Campbell's YouTube videos would be phenomenal. His presentation is incredible, and I think it's a more complete theory of everything than any other physicist has ever put out there. And it's really kind of... Yeah, it ties the metaphysical with the scientific, and it really, I mean, again, it's experiential. He's been there. I mean, and to think that we can fly to all of these worlds, that we don't have to wait for necessarily for our big brothers to come here in 3D, that we can actually transcend the body and, like you said, have our own airport and our own stargates and our own systems. In fact, I was listening to some work by William Henry on ancient stargates. And that was the conclusion that he came to, is that quite possibly it's not really about physical star travel necessarily, or physical star gates that we will take our 3D body in. And that is one of the conversations that I know you've had with people training, is learning how to transcend the 3D body and get into 4D and 5D and above, and learn how to have these experiences and these relationships with these higher intelligences and not be so so body-centric. And that, I think, is kind of my main topic today, is really about transition. You know, in all of our systems, our economic system, our relationships, our philosophies, our views of the universe, what is that next sort of thing, kind of like a trapeze artist, you know, we're letting go of one thing and swinging to another thing, and the transition is really key. You know, do we have enough momentum? Do we have, for a lot of people, it's incredibly scary, and we need some sort of safety, some sort of knowing that it's all going to be okay. And you know what? Sometimes knowing it's all going to be okay is we fall on the net and bounce and realize, oh, hey, we didn't die. But I think there's a lot of monkeys that are jumping out of the coconut and going, you know, we're leading the way. We're the monkeys leading the way, the march, going to the next thing, the next trapeze. And, you know, with Dean Clifford, we were talking a little bit about what that looks like economically, you know, maybe creating a parallel financial system, a barter system, trading, even just, you know, having financial relationships with the people in our community, primarily recognizing that we are the valuable ones. We actually produce all of the value in our society, and then we are the backers or creditors of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve System, and all the global elites who are running this whole system. We're the bank. We're the creditors, and we do it with our value, and it turns... You know, we're literally turning all of our presumptions that we've had for 100 years on its head back to the way it should be, back to the way it really is. And mm-hmm. You talked about the power structures changing and crumbling and the monkeys holding on. Well, those monkeys that are holding on, that are really going to have a problem, that's part of a system that was dead in the first place. It was a lie in the first place. I like to look at one of the things that helps us to make these transitions in our life, to go through sometimes the trials of breaking not dissociation, but literally breaking down our lives, looking deep in the mirror, like Tom was talking about, doing the soul searching. One of the things that helps is a larger context. And, you know, the Mayan calendar gives us a larger context of cycles of time. The Yuga system from ancient India gives us the concept of the cycles of time, you know, that as we are in orbit in the solar system with another, we're in binary, we're in a relationship with another star, possibly Alcyone and the Pleiades, that as we get closer to the center of the galaxy, our planet, our solar system, is under a huge influx of energy that raises our consciousness, raises culture, actually diminishes the amount of technology we need, because we don't need cell phones anymore. We all have telepathy. We don't really need to kill anything anymore. We actually just live off of plants, live off of sunlight energy. This is all in our history. This is all written down. This has all been recorded, and more people are beginning to learn about this information and realize this is our real history. This is our real birthright. And there's also a corresponding decline in civilization and decline in consciousness as we move away from the center of the galaxy on the 12,000-year orbit, on the descending arc going through the yugas. And we just passed that, the bottom of the barrel, so to speak, back in the Dark Ages in 493, and now we're ascending again, and we're actually moving up. And so, what we're realizing is that we're not necessarily evolving. We're just coming back to what we already know ourselves to be. I mean, the history of this country, the history that most people learned in high school, that history, that story that was written and given to us, is only about 150 years old. That history was a story that was written, that was handed to us. And our view about ourselves, our view about our society, our view about the world, our view about how things work in the universe is a very young story. Ultimately it has its beginnings back in the darkest age, back in the point where, our solar system was at its furthest point away from the galaxy, back when human consciousness could barely even comprehend that we were anything more than a bag of meat, So we're on the ascending arc, and understanding this, having this larger context of the cycles of time, and seeing how this energy influences the planets, every single planet in our solar system is heating up, the sun and its magnetism, the earth and its magnetism, which I believe are conscious beings, and then, of course, humanity and our level of consciousness, our level of awareness, that all the changes and the transformation that's occurring in human beings right now is part and parcel of this cyclic process that occurs, this kind of spiral overall evolution in this larger cycle. And so as we learn this, we realize, we can have faith. We can have faith that the man isn't going to come and crush this new uprising. Yeah, they'll try and they'll do some things, but there isn't anything that can crush the transformation of human consciousness right now. It is going to continue to progress and going to continue to grow, because that is the overall cycle inside of the Great Year. And, that helps us kind of let go of the old trapeze and swing over to the new one and, enjoy the flight in between. And I really feel like I feel more aligned with Kalaman's view of the calendar, the Mayan calendar, because I intuitively just feel like this is the crux time right now. I mean, we're in it. This is it. We just went through two, 3 months of really intense time compression. And, man, I mean, to think, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, when we first heard of this, you know, however long ago you heard about the Mayan calendar, this is it right now. We're in it. This is the end of the Mayan calendar right now, the next few days, and, or, you know, the next couple weeks. You know, even, who cares, even if it isn't, this is it. This is the last year, or this is the last 18 days. It's phenomenal. And I think, I was talking with you earlier, it's like, huh, all of that stress, all of that concern I had about what this was going to look like, all of the Hollywood ideas about what was might happen, all of the people who have written books and sold a bunch of books about this time period, all of the speculation, just all seems to fall away. And it's just, there's a peace because there's this deep knowing inside that, you know what, it's going to work out. No matter what happens, it's going to work out. And I really, really feel that. And it's just so apropos that, you know, it seems so worldly to talk about, you know, stuff like what Dean Clifford was talking about as far as being a sovereign and trust law and all of that, but it's actually very apropos because it is about claiming our right as a sovereign being, and all of those rights were given to us by God. And the story that has been foisted upon human beings over the last 2,000 years, which we actually have all been complicit in, none of us are not responsible for it, that story is like a coat, like a heavy hood that's been covered over, and now the revealing occurs, and all we're doing is we're just seeing what we are. We're seeing what we forgot, and it's just consciousness that's waking up. I mean, maybe there's no real change occurring at all. It's just that, oh, we're just waking up. We're just realizing what we had forgotten. And, you know, part of that is a physical process, like I said, of the yugas of the solar system moving through the galaxy. And part of it may be something even grander and more mysterious. But, you know, I think these contexts and these concepts help us to make the transition. And then, in addition, of course, you know, shows like this and shows like Tom's and shows like Mel Fabregas's and all the information that's out there, it's like the community is growing tremendously, and that's, and everybody listening, you know, thank you for listening, because you're lending your energy to this new consciousness, to this new movement. You're giving it power, and it's your power. You know, this show doesn't want the power. Tom's show doesn't want the power. We don't want any new power for ourselves. We already have all the power. Each individual person has all the power they need. We wake up to it. We don't need it from anybody else. And that's the most empowering thing. That's the most amazing thing that I'm seeing right now. And it's just so, it's like, duh. Duh. Yes, oh, my God.
It's going,
duh.
Yeah.
No guru.
Yeah, my own reality is that, you know, two things. One, you know, it went through phases. You know, the first phase was, you know, having the near-death experience, just being blown wide open and walking away from one world, which is, you know, the world of, you know, materiality and outer appearances and, you know, acceptance through outer appearances, all that stuff. You know, seeking love and acceptance and approval outside of yourself, leaving that world. And believe me, I was totally entrenched in it. I was doing commercial real estate. I had my own office. I was a board of director on the Chamber of Commerce. I had the fast car, the big house, you know, the boat, the truck, all the other stuff, you know, everything you could think of. And, you know, all the trappings to be successful, you know, I was there, you know, right in there. But, you know, when I had the drowning, the near-death experience, I realized that I was not happy. All of these things, I didn't own these things, they owned me. And it was so interesting, the transformation and the quality of people that I surrounded myself with that just didn't give a damn about who I was or my feelings or transitions. All they cared about is that I lived up to their expectations and played this certain role that they found acceptable. Just all these things was just a huge shock. And I just walked away from all of it. Completely just walked away from it. Gave most of my stuff away. Said, I'm out of here. I'm done. And what was really interesting is that even in giving away everything, I ended up getting everything back because I was following my own inner guidance. I was following my soul purpose. And everything came back to me. And then I had another transition period. And I go, you know what? I'm done. I'm done here. I'm finished here. I'm out of here. I'm gonna move on. I'm following my inner guidance to the next level. Same thing. Gave everything away. You know, took off with my truck, a few things in the back of my truck, you know, an old beat up trailer, and that was it. And it started over again. And then everything was given back to me 10 times more. So it's kind of funny going through that transition is that we have this great fear of losing our stuff. And now I'm telling people, don't give me any more stuff. I don't need any more stuff. I want to live a simple life. And all this stuff keeps coming, which I just pass on, you know, to other people using. But it's really funny, and I'm bringing this up just so other people can realize that we are prisoners, you know, to our attachments, to our stuff, and to other people's opinions and acceptance and approval of ourselves. And now's the time we're going to have to really get in touch with who we are and why we're here and what our real soul purpose is and step out of social consciousness and start getting on with moving into our own Christ consciousness, because that's where the planet seems to be going.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, I never would have suspected that about your history. I mean, given where you're at now and less people think that they have to go have a drowning experience, you know, there definitely are other... Because of course, you know, you approach death and it immediately catalyzes your whole life and alters your perspective that quick. And then other people, it's a process. It's 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and you know, it's still going to be happening for people even after, you know, the end of the Mayan calendar. And it's this awakening, it's this excitement, you know, and that's one of the first stages. It's like, oh my God, you know, look what's out there. And then you start to see things and you start to question a lot and you get a little bit messianic. You know, we want to share with everybody and change the world and convert your friends and family. And then you start to get it, you know, you start to find out the truth about the shadow world and how, you know, the global elite has been running things, and you're really pissed, and then you realize it's too big and it can crush you, and you get a little bit apathetic, and then finally I think you get to this place where you begin to start to accept it and maybe go through that cycle a few times, you know, and you want to pull away from it because it's so huge, and then you reengage, and I think it just ultimately just as more and more people, and I love, like, again, I'm sitting here in front of Tom, so I'm thinking of the 100th monkey and that whole story of, as you know, 10% of a population begins to move, begins to adopt a new behavior, a new action, a new thought form or whatever, then that's the guide. That's the thing that energetically causes a shift. I mean, this was a scientific experiment. Well, I don't know if it's an experiment, but it's a scientific discovery about how things really, really work. And so, you know, thank you, James, for everything that you've done for 25 years to really be that first monkey out there, you know. Sorry, we got somebody else on the line. Hopefully you can mute there. But, yeah, to be one of the big monkeys in front, you know, leading the way and going through these processes and then showing other people. And now that we have the energy of thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people seeking freedom, seeking awareness, seeking, you know, growth, seeking connection with the divine, seeking sovereignty, it's, you know, it's just going to accelerate and make it easier for everybody else who's coming along, you know. So
It's interesting. I don't think I had any choice in the matter. I know we always have free will and things of that nature, but I know I chose these things just like everybody else did before they came in. There was choices already made, and we can, you know, there's wiggle room within that, but you know, with free will. But I think it's time for all of us to really take a long, hard look at our choices and our actions and the consequences of those choices and actions and how they affect others and the environment, and take, just get that brutal honesty out and look at what we're doing, and then just weigh that up with you know, the old action reaction principle and karma, and how, you know, how that's going to weigh either heavy or light on our soul in our next understanding or in the future, and start choosing wisely and getting behind this awakening and healing process, you know, and the great call for freedom that's coming out. You know, we all need to just stop doing anything that's suppressing that, and start shifting into support of this process.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's the big discovery for me really has been, again, that, you know, when we talk about things that create karma or don't create karma, it's, these are things that are in alignment with spirit or existent laws. I mean, for millions or billions of years, these immutable laws of the universe or of God have existed, and it's just the function of being in alignment with this flow of energy that's always been there. And that when we talk about karma, it's just about creating almost an energetic schism or a disharmony or a discordant frequency where we just have been out of harmony with it, out of alignment. And so as we say, you know, pay our karmic debt or whatever, all that's happening is, yay, we're coming back in alignment with that frequency of the divine. And so the lie, the energies that we put in place that have kind of been not in alignment with that, the ego, the identity, all that seems to, from the ego point of view, suffer as we pay our karmic debt. But in actuality, all that's happening is that which was unreal in the first place is dropping away again. So,
oh, yeah.
It's just, I just keep coming back to that theme, like, this is how, this is who we always have been, and we just have been asleep. So, hey, do we have time for John Riley to get on the line here? John Kelly, sorry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, John. I was going, John Riley, where'd he come from? But
sorry.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we definitely do. I wanted to talk just for one more minute. I wanted to hold John just for the, you know, with Dean Clifford, what he had to say, what I thought was fascinating. I want to get your take on it, where he was saying, you know, we don't need a middleman. You know, we don't need all these, you know, basically parasites that are not producing anything. They're not doing anything, and actually they're getting all their power from us and resources from us. We're the resource, and they're not really producing anything. So I think that's what's happening, is that, you know, these positions of power and wealth and the elitism and this sense of entitlement that it has been playing out for so long looks like it's just completely starting to collapse in on itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of us have wondered, you know, how that came to be. And I kind of like Barbara Hahn-Clow's work on this when she, you know, in Catastrophobia, how she talks about how after several major cataclysms on the planet, you know, that our civilization was kind of reduced, and maybe also in the cycle of yugas, you know, of course, consciousness is diminished somewhat. So actually it was in a survival state, and rediscovering or working through agriculture and all these things, in a survival state, we gave our power away to feel safe, to feel secure. And so you saw that with the Patriot Act. You saw that with George Bush, you know, our big daddy that was going to take care of us. And of course we know that was all constructed that way because they understand human psyche. And so we're waking up to all this, and we're realizing, you know what? We don't need daddy. We don't need to sell ourselves down the river for this false security anymore. And so we produce all the value. We've backed all these guys. You know, the banks exist because of the value we produce. You're right. These guys are parasites. And we're just unplugging. We're just basically saying, and that's what Dean Clifford is saying too, is like, who are you and what authority do you have? I don't, well, you need to pay, how about you pay this, you know, $50? I'm not going to pay it, so do whatever you want with that. You can throw it in the trash, but I'm not going to pay it. It's just simply, it's just not even acknowledging that they even have any power anymore. And of course, you know, you have to do that in a smart way, but mm-hmm. that's the basic idea and attitude towards them.
Yeah, I like the way that he said that he talks about a bill. When they hand you a bill, you go, okay, you know, cash it in, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you owe us this amount of money. And you go, oh, wait a second. Well, I'm the creditor in this situation. I'm not the debtor. Debtor, you are. You know, you're the ones in debt. So, okay, pay me.
Yeah, the IRS assessing a tax lien or whatever, levying a tax against you. Really what that is they're presenting a bill to be paid, but we're the actual ones who, we're the creditors of that bill. We actually produce the money that the IRS or that our Federal Reserve, whatever, has utilized. And so they're just presenting it to the wrong people.
Yeah.
And we've somehow accepted it, so... Yeah, I love that, too. I was just like, it was so, oh, my God, that's so no-brainer. And it's completely bass-ackwards of how it's supposed to be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I love the part, you know, where, to me, it was all really clear when I go, wait a second, you know, you're a corporation, like the state, you know, let's say the state of Washington. Okay, now you're a corporation, correct? They go, yes. Okay, where are you in the corporation? Who are you in the corporation? And the correct answer is I'm the trustee, you know, or the employee in the corporation.
Yeah.
And so you ask, well, who's the beneficiary? And who's the director of this corporation? And
yes.
And the only real answer is you are, you know. Like,
yeah.
I am the director. I am the director and the beneficiary of this corporation. So I'm telling you to dismiss all this nonsense. They can't. You know, they can't say they're the director. They can't say they're, you know, the beneficiary. They're not. We're the ones that gave them. We're paying their salaries. We're paying the taxes. We're paying all these things. I mean, we created them to benefit us. That's why
Absolutely.
We created these agencies, institutions to benefit us. So basically, that's their job. So what? You know, if they're not benefiting us and they're in direct conflict with us, then I guess we just need to fire them.
Yeah, absolutely. even the simple one, like, excuse me, Dean Clifford does this really well. Excuse me, basically addressing the judge.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me that you're not a public servant? And of course, the judge wouldn't say, well, No, I am a public servant, but then he doesn't want to admit that, because if he was to admit that he was a public servant, then he'd admit that he's serving the public, which is us, and that means we have the authority. And so he's caught in a catch-22, and I just love how it's just so simple. It's just so simple, and,
oh, yeah.
And the law is all there. The law is all there. It's not like you have to... it doesn't even matter about the law. The law is actually an artifice. It's a construct based on opinions and all that, but... The thing that he points out is really it's we have of course right given to us by God, but also by you doing these processes and calling it out, calling it what it is, we actually have even in court legal authority based on their own laws, based on their own statutes, I should say. And it's just not enough people know that these statutes exist. Even if we use their own statutes, we can, you know, rule the show. So really,
exactly.
Really cool stuff. And it's just, it's all coming out. It's all everywhere, you know?
Yeah. It's a matter of, there's an old saying, you know, if you don't use your rights, you don't have any. And so we need to get educated and stand up and use our authority and our rights. And you know, if we don't, they will surely take them away. That's the bottom line.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I would highly recommend, just plug in, not a plug for Dean's sake, but a plug for anybody listening to get educated about this process, looking at Dean Clifford, any YouTube video, and then also Creditors and Commerce, so Gordon Hall. The reason why is because these two guys come from the right place. They come from the idea that you are a divine being given inalienable rights. And it's not about sticking it to the man. It's not about being angry. It's about being the most honorable, responsible person you can be. Because as a free human being, as a God being, you have incredible ethics because your ethics are in alignment with those immutable divine laws that have been in place for millions of years. And it's not about any outside authority. It's just you're such harmony that... that's the place you're coming from. So in any of these legal issues, any challenges to the court, any challenges to the system, you're actually coming from a place of incredible integrity and incredible power. It's not externally imposed. It's just who you are. So I like that aspect, and I like that that's where they come from. And then, so.
Great. Yeah, hey, well, thanks for coming on the air, and... And usually this is the time I have to sign off, but we just signed up for the second half for a two-hour show, which we can actually initiate today or wait till so we can go ahead and go over a little bit. So let's bring John on.
Okay, here he is.
Hey, James.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, James. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah. For the listeners that don't know anything about you, maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, what you do. I know, you know, people are familiar with reverse speech. Most people on the air are. Maybe you can give a short synopsis of that. And then we can go into a lot of the work that you're doing here. And if you have something you want to talk about, you know, this sovereign movement or this revolution we seem to be undergoing right now, I'd love to hear your take on that as well.
That's great, James. I've been exploring fascinating phenomena of human speech that were popularized on Art Bell's late-night broadcast in the 1990s as reverse speech, whereby Australian research pioneer David Oates had detected intelligible speech patterns encrypted backwards in human speech. When recordings of human speech were played in reverse, they revealed what appeared to be unconscious communications. And Mr. Oates brought the subject to national prominence through Art Bell's late-night broadcasts, and I was one of the people who was curious about the information he was presenting and wanted to evaluate it for myself. I enrolled in a course of study that was then offered in Southern California at a post-secondary vocational offering certificates in speech analysis. And for designations that were pending in the U.S. Department of Labor as classifications as part of clinical medicine at that time. I rose to prominence in that community and produced information regarding some very controversial cases. I received a lot of media attention to my work over the years. I became a CBS radio feature producer for some time in Minneapolis, producing a weekly report based on this kind of investigative intelligence. And I famously reported on world affairs, including the facets of the Iraq War, serial killer cases in Wichita, Kansas, and other fascinating political and business figures of the first part of this new millennium. And through the course of those studies, I also investigated photographic phenomena and the videography of UFOs. And currently I write a column for Examiner.com, the Vancouver UFO Examiner, which is a column that is cited and linked or indexed from many high-profile sites, including USA Today, the Dallas Morning News, Huffington Post, Forbes.com. So I hope that listeners will have a chance to read some of the interesting articles and the podcast and videos linked through the Examiner.com, the Vancouver UFO Examiner. So that James is sort of the first part of my response. I've lost track of in my presentation. I've lost track of the other two parts of your question. I know you were leading up to what Dean Clifford or today's speaker had to say.
Yeah. This is a whole different subject, but I was just curious about your take on what's happening with this, what looks like a global revolution, and with New York Times Square and some of the other things that are unfolding, and anything you want to share about your experience with Dean Clifford or Spencer or anything else?
Well, I felt that the presentations were well assembled and unique, presenting fairly what I felt were penetrating vistas into procedures with which a lot of the civilian population won't be familiar with. And I thought there was value in people coming together, joining together to participate in the presentation, either online or in person, to make that event happen, and so that people in a community were talking about issues that would be important about living in honor and in the truth, and becoming educated and informed participants in society. These were all good reasons for that gathering. And I saw many, as well, many of the participants had a lot of individual stories to share related to the topics being presented, and they had good cause to seek, seeking answers from these expert speakers. And I thought they did provide thoughtful answers. And I knew, and they also offered to be available as well after the event if people want private consultations. I think there's an emerging interest. Of course, there's the economic factors that are, that constructive people are seeking an outlet for their voices to be heard in a difficult marketplace, a difficult jobs marketplace. And people there's a lot more homelessness now, and I know about in the United States, and a lot of people are being challenged with questions about foreclosure of their homes and mortgages and so on. There's a tremendous social or economic pressure on families. And it's changing the economic class landscape, so to speak. With more pressure towards creating greater distance between those who have and those who have not. So challenging, I think, to see in a land that was so much, was historically known for so much promise. America. Opportunities for freedom, commerce, etc. That. There were articles, I think, in the last 2 weeks I was reading about the people discussing the end of the American dream, or the possibility of the dream of our parents or grandparents for life in terms of lifestyles. It's certainly eluding the grasp of many. We're in historic times of changes, but they're also, they're also symbolic, I think, of spiritual dimensions of change as well. But I don't want to jump in a little further there, James. What are you going to say?
Oh well, that was basically it. The next one I wanted to go into was we can talk about some of the activity. I know we've talked about other shows here, but I mean, you've been out into the wee hours of the morning with your gear out there, with both the ability to record at nighttime, night vision cameras and regular cameras as well, using some pretty high technology, and maybe talk about how some of the things you've experienced here. And then after that, I wanted to open it up to callers. So I'm going to give the call numbers out, and then you can talk a little bit about your work here and what you've experienced here, and then we'll open up the lines to callers. So if anybody wants to call in, the numbers are 888-627-6008, and that's the U.S. and Canada line. It's toll-free line. It's 888-627-6008, and if you want to call direct, it's 530-327-7602, and the other line is 530-413-4510, and we'll just test those lines and see how they work out. There's one more line, but I think I've given enough, and I'll give those out again. So if you didn't get them this time, go ahead and grab a pencil and we'll give them out again. But anyway, so basically, we're opening up the lines for calls if you want to call in, and then we'll get to your calls right after we hear John's story about his experiences here at the East Seti Ranch.
Well, they call it the East Seti Ranch, but I've recently been informed that there's a new name that's going around the circuit, apparently, on some dimensional circuit. This place is being referred to as the East Seti Stargate.
Yes, uh-huh.
Did you already tell that story?
No, I didn't. I know. I can tell it, but I don't want to give the name. But there is a famous broadcaster. I'll leave it up to him if he wants to come forward. But he came to the ranch and actually experienced what's happening here, and he made his own personal contact with some ultra-dimensional beings. What was interesting is that he went to another conference and met up with another group, and they gave him the exact same name of this being that came in, and she said, we met at the East Seti Stargate. So coming from the ultra-dimensionals, calling this place a Stargate, to me is very, very heartening, you know, very...
Well, definitely very appropriate, too.
Yeah, and then having the verification of somebody, you know, out of the blue coming up with the name, the exact name, and then saying where he met this being was quite a shock to him, and then referring to East Seti as a Stargate. So I thought that was quite interesting, the way that came forward, but I haven't been given permission to give his name or go from there, so we'll see how that unfolds, but I thought... you know, it was quite amazing that the ultra-dimensionals called this place the East Seti Stargate.
Well, I didn't need a lot of convincing when I heard that story because of the different things that I had seen over a number of years that I had been visiting. And particularly, I've been fortunate to capture what I consider very, very unusual incidents on camera and been there with other witnesses who accompanied me and we saw the same thing together, so... Lots of different phenomena that are related to lights in the forest or in the trees or up at some different altitude in the sky. I know one of the photographers here was successful in previous years in bouncing a laser beam off of a UFO and posted that on YouTube, and you see the UFO flare up when the line of the beam crosses its path, and you know that beam doesn't go on for infinity. I mean, even a 1 watt laser is now 82 miles, I think. So we have some estimate these things are within range, physical range of that beam. It was it's a lot of really fascinating stuff happening here, and it's a place of great potential. I guess I like to think that when I've been fortunate to have all these different experiences, that they were novel in some way. Each one of them was different. So in some ways, I guess I developed the ability to, you know, be involved in these incidents as a witness. But I think there was a lot of challenges to stamina, and I think related to the stories, James, that you had told about people's nervous systems can be hijacked by these high energy phenomena are around. So I think I got good training and. Over a period of years, I was able to keep up, and this year was a bonus year for filming. Certainly, at East Seti, I was very fortunate. I think I must have at least 80 hours of raw footage between two cameras, and at least eight to a dozen hours of that is good, strong visual objects in the sky or unusual lights in the mountains. So, lots of mysterious stuff. A great year for filming, absolutely, and. You know, with your help and assistance and staff and the visitors, the East Seti Ranch, all the great camaraderie that happens here that helped to make those recordings, make it possible for me to have so many people working with me as spotters to help me catch the objects. Couldn't have done it by myself. So really, really an amazing year in that regards, and hoping to translate a lot of good footage into a documentary that I'm in production for now, and its working title is UFO Mountain, and it explores dimensional transcendental themes, as transpersonal themes, as well as the intense visual themes that the UFOs bring out in the context of a modern society. And this we're talking about now, it discusses the energies expressing through social protest in democratic societies. And where I'm from in Vancouver, there's very open and expressive environment for protest. It's quite permissive environment for protest does take place on a regular basis, and many causes will use protest in the downtown. And most recently, I was filming the protest at the Vancouver Club over the appearance of Dick Cheney, who was giving a presentation inside of the club while protesters argued that he should be arrested under existing war crimes legislation. So there's plenty of activity in Vancouver around protest, and not just anarchic chaos, you know, with lots of vandalism and, you know, insanity, but people who are serious about causes, who are serious about things like citizen arrest, those people, good people, are excited about getting out and in their lifetimes wanting to see, you know, constructive change, and feeling that they're, by participating, that they're going to help be instrumental in creating constructive change for a better society that works for everybody and not just a few. So we see that in the streets where in the city where I live in. Of course, the news tells us in many cities, and there's layer upon layer of movements that are coming together, you know, now under the Occupy Wall Street theme. So we're seeing that as the latest venue. And there's a form of activism. I don't know if the numbers, how representative it is in terms of population who actively protest against the wars in Afghanistan or Iraq. But in terms of, you know, rallying people together and getting a highly visible cause going, in terms of Wall Street, they certainly succeeded, those protesters. I don't know what's incubating through this protest process, but I think that, you know, the ideas around sovereignty and self-determination are important. You know, we think about people who are innovators and inventors. They didn't seek permission to, you know, try to make something, you know, create something good for the world. You know, they just took their initiative and did it. And, you know, and underwent a lot of struggles in the course of achieving things, but people didn't wait for any green lights. You know, people who were ambitious about creating good works pursued them vigorously, and I think, you know, that makes a better society for everybody when people invigorate themselves. You know, they charge their own energies and bring their own abilities to bear to create something better that works for everybody. So I don't see any. In other words, I don't feel that this kind of change that's suggested in society, this social change that is suggested, are necessarily something to fear. You know, that the possibility that something very good is coming from this also exists.
Go ahead.
Well, James, I'll take a breath and let you explain.
Yeah, it seems like the only ones that really have anything to fear are the ones who have been, you know, capitalizing at the expense of humanity, the earth, or that have just totally railroaded people into, you know, losing their homes and their jobs, you know, sold their jobs out. I mean, the ones that have just, they just have totally forsaken their souls, you know, and are just going off of pure greed and profit. I mean, those are the ones that are fearful right now, because the tide is turning, and you know, they have a lot to hide, and they have a lot of things that in their soul they're not really proud of, and they have a reaction to their actions. And I think those are the ones that are really exhibiting the fear, although they seem like they don't care no matter what, you know. Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Well, I think yeah, these whole countries are, it certainly are the news out of Europe about entire nations facing all kinds of agitation in the streets and political instability in their own governments. The concept of quick and, you know, small R revolutionary political change, you know, nonviolent perhaps political change, but rapid change in government or leadership. This is a time when it's possible. More so, you know, just as a trend. I mean, look how this year has gone. You know, so many figures, Egyptian government that collapsed, Libya being defaced. I think there was this Arab Spring business. There's several other wars going on at the same time. There's really a big geopolitical terraforming exercise going on. And you have to think how many leaders feel susceptible. And, of course, as you said, in the heightened paranoia that that would create and the crackdowns that would bring on their societies as well. You know, we see so many of these initiatives, and I'm talking about what's in the mainstream news, but so many initiatives that are about becoming a snitch, you know, and you know, telling on people at Walmart and stuff like that. I mean,
yeah.
This ongoing campaign, you know, to turn everybody into a spy on everybody else kind of thing. Is it really, this trend is going on at the same time.
I saw that one, that thing they play at Walmart. All, you know, if you have a friend or family that is suspicious, it's your duty to turn them in, you know, and here's the number, you know. It's just like, God, I think we saw that in Hitler's time, you know. They pretty much did the same thing, and also in, you know, the movies like Fahrenheit 451 or, you know, George Orwell's Brave New World, you know, all of these things, they've warned us about these programs, and we've seen these programs enacted before, and they didn't work before, and they're not going to work now, but they're still trying, you know, I have to give them credit, they are still trying to create these Nazi regimes and take away everybody's freedom and turn us into nice little Autobots.
Well, we can't ignore the fact that those threads exist, you know, historically and philosophically in North American society.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, the current state of our society, the current balance can't sustain forever, you know, with all these, the pressures from these intense perspectives that share the land here, that live together here. There's a lot of unresolved justice and unresolved questions. So any one society can only hope to, you know, ameliorate or maintain a balance with any percentage of that. I don't, you know, huge global change now, you know, like cataclysmic global revolutionary change, which is possible given the, you know, the interlinking economies that are failing. But, I guess I'm impatient, and I thought that if people were going to get agitated about anything, they would have been getting agitated 10 years ago. But, you know, we didn't see that, you know, President Obama offers many of the same things that his predecessors did that he brings to office. Mm-hmm. So, I guess I'm a skeptic. In other words, although I've read of this subject, I've read of anticipated change in North American society.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we have the, you know, I mean, I don't, you know, is it too much to say that I don't know if we have a critical mass of people with the fiber, you know, to shake, for this snake to shed its skin, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah,
where are the numbers?
Well, you know what I feel is that the numbers are there, but the wave behind them of consciousness and energy is so immense that there's nothing that can stop it. I mean, we are looking at an alignment with the galactic core or whatever you want to call it. Everybody has a different name for it, where there's intense, you know, magnetic fields pressing towards the Earth. We're watching massive solar ejections, one after another after another, you know, plummeting the Earth, whacking the Earth. It's just amazing when you know how this energy affects the bioelectric fields around the body, how it does create changes even in the DNA, how they tie in these solar flares and these shifts to historically to huge changes in social and economic policies, things of that nature. They all tie into the solar cycle. So any way you look at it, I just see there's no way around it. You know, like we've all said, you know, there are the Mayan calendar, there's yugas, there's all the pundits and prophets. Anybody who's a seer knows that we are you know, in for huge changes and a time compression, and things are going to start moving very fast. So I just don't see there's any way around it other than a eventual complete alignment in unity consciousness, where we actually end up living in harmony with each other and the planet and joining the rest of the universe in peace.
Yeah, so, you know, to get there is, you know, we're not there today, so there's a journey, you know, that's going to happen from here to there. And, you know, the character of that journey, you know, is... Well, it's going to be high adventure. I think you know, not everyone's going to stay around for this act, but those of us who are here in these times, you know, we can still do great things under the pressures of change. You know, people who are pursuing ideals in their lives shouldn't give up, you know, their ambitions. They should see the course even in difficult times to complete the goals, the high ideals they set for themselves in life, not be swayed by circumstances, because we know things can get worse and things can get better. It's never a permanent state. I honestly, you know, I have different perceptions about large-scale warfare, you know, issues coming up. I don't know if I see so much natural catastrophe, but I do see that. I sense more like, you know, human conflict on international scale, and I just think that In some ways, how life in North America has been fairly comfort in terms of defending the shores and stuff like that. There haven't been a lot of land invasions here in a long time, you know, by armed, you know, organized nations and so on. So that's, you know, certainly the sense of security here has changed, not only psychologically, but I think that. Populations here are going to. There are dangers, as you've described many times, James. There are dangers that we're going to face living here, just like the folks. You could say, as a parallel, the folks in Japan who were affected by the events in Fukushima. You know, their proximity to that industry working in their community. There was a cost, you know, a downside to that as well, but it's affected many.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, yeah. You know, life here can be great, but it's not as good with under a challenged economy. And hope that, you know, through these transitional forces, people can align themselves better, set themselves up to create a better future. You know, it's still possible to be very successful under difficult times if people try.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an old saying, you know, that evolution, you know, really wouldn't happen unless it was pressed, you know, into being. And there needs to be some kind of a catalyst, and you know, we cannot deny the catalyst is there, and you know, it's very, very clear right now that things are changing. There is a movement, and it's global, it's worldwide, and I really do in my heart of hearts know that this wave, whatever you want to call it, this unity consciousness wave, this energy coming through and what's behind it is just so immense that there's really no way out. You know, the old saying, resistance is futile. You know, we can continue to you know, try to row against this wave or you know, try to stand in front of this wave, but it's going to have its way. You know, it's going to do what it needs to do. And if anybody, the only real intelligent choice is to flow with this, you know, flow with this wave, and don't try to stand in front of it.
Mm. Yeah, we have to believe that, you know, that change is good, and that, you know, the future is, you know, a good future can come. But we have to also be, I guess, ambitious and brave to ride out change.
Yeah. Well, I also know too, there's going to be a lot of you know, unintelligent choices made, you know, during this process, and a lot of lessons learned during this process. And there's a lot of eternal souls that are going to take, you know, the hardest lesson, or they're going to take it to the height of that lesson, which might be they're transcending this level, you know, and moving on. So, you know, in that process that we call death, which I don't really believe in death anyway, everything just transforms. You know, but anyway, that's some souls have chosen that path. The way I see it, you know, they haven't chosen. They aren't going to choose to make this change and make this shift. They've chosen to have a different experience, and that's really okay, you know, because there is no judgment. No, there's only reaction. so however their eternal soul chose to learn those lessons, then that's the way they chose to experience it.
Yeah. So there's been a lot to ponder on here at the ranch. I've been exploring the mystic pathways and byways on the land here, and getting familiar with all of the different places, the white salmon, the field. It's been great, you know, spending time here and just knowing, again, as a witness to the different phenomena, you know, being awakened to the potential of this place for things to happen, and being open to taking the time to see these things. You know, it's like learning to smell the flowers and you learn the rhythm of life out here. It's really very educational for me. I can't say enough how invigorating it is here in so many different ways. But again, it's that potential, you know, of those high energy phenomena that happen so close to us and say something to us about ourselves and our potential high energy states, where right. You know, other kinds of human performance factors come into play. If we can be close to them, if we can inhabit a world where beings with higher abilities, you know, interact and transcend what appear to us to be like physical limitations, then what does that say about our potential? And you know, how can we transcend and, you know, change the game, so to speak, in economic catastrophe and social catastrophe? How can we change the game and invent the new rules that will stick? You know, find a new way to play the game and reinvent it from the inside. Who's to say that people can't, you know, can't mimic that that kind of performance? You know, Bruce Lee always used to say in the movies, "Be like water. You know, it hits hard, but you can't hit it." You know, learning to flow is just like you're saying, that Tao, that finding that harmony and riding that, you know, harmonious wave, the big wave, finding the big wave and riding the distance, you know, in life. So yeah, I think this is a time, you know, when people who work as healers and counselors and consultants, advisors, can invigorate, you know, their communities with you know, high energy solutions to get people empowered. You know, maybe losing employment for one in one career path is opening the door to another. I don't know when unemployment will heal in this country, maybe in a decade. I read these very unattractive statistics, but people have to focus on high ideals. And I think again that the phenomena here, this intelligence that interacts with the people here in these visual ways, you know, with the UFO contact, CE5 type incidents, and other things people photograph and see with their eyes. So many different things happen here, but you know, I think it kind of invigorates people's consciousness in a constructive way. It was something I was discussing today with one of the fellows, one of my sky watching colleagues out here, about the ET influence on social and political factors, and how many initiatives are ET driven. I remember well that tape that you had, James, of the UFO over the dorm, I believe in Portland or in Oregon College.
Oh yeah, about
10 years ago or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it was emitting all those sound waves that were being picked up by the camera while it was, you know, hovering over the building. It's just, you got all this intelligence about that was like their night school education or something there.
yeah. They said, "I go, what are you doing? You know, 2 o'clock in the morning, hovering over Portland State University?" And they said, "Higher learning." And
higher learning. Yeah.
And emitting this very deep pulse was coming out of the ship, and they found out that there was actually a binary code in that pulse, and Jim Delatosa was working on that quite a while back. But they go, this is really bizarre. So you know, what I'm seeing is that, you know, I asked them to go more into detail with that, and they said, you know, they're here to help us release the past and heal, and they're also preparing us for this big reunion that's getting about ready to happen. So So it's going to get real interesting, you know, in the days to come. There's such a potential for this planet, you know, to become the emerald jewel of the universe that was meant to be, and to change its course, you know, and start bringing out the fuelless energy technology and cleaning up the environment and, you know, getting rid of this manufactured lack program and getting back to the abundance of nature and the way things should be, you know, set up. But, you know, the potential is all there. We just need to unify and stand up and claim it, you know, and just say, you know, these are my divine God-given rights, and basically, you know, I'm not going to play this other program anymore.
Well, I think if those lead to good results, then yeah, I think that's the path. As I said earlier, the inventors, the innovators, chose self-autonomy in making important decisions that society wasn't producing the solutions that they eventually produced themselves. So we should give ourselves as much permission as the great people before us to get active and involved and build strengths that make us better participants in communities and, you know, building future communities that work.
Oh, I agree. You know, we need examples and templates. That's one of the things I was working on here is creating a template. And we're doing something here that's really never been done before. I shouldn't say never, you know, I should never say never, but, you know, having a group of sovereign, self-governing beings working together and just creating that organic flow that needs to happen, you know, where and still having some organizational things going on, but not, you know, creating a hierarchy or another slave system or whatever. It's quite a delicate dance with getting the things done that need to get done and doing them in joy and bliss and still maintaining, you know, the sovereign free will.
Yeah, as you say, like finding a working organizational design philosophy that people will as broadly accepted and, you know, functional, because as you say, things have to get done. I don't know. I mean, if there's many philosophies that describe cataclysmic social change and what it, you know, what the outcomes can look like. If you have like a workers' revolution that can quickly be superseded by a military dictatorship, and you move away from a sort of an intellectual liberal arts type of a culture with lots of sciences and stuff, you move into a really swinging more towards something like a Stalinist type of a culture. People have so many appetites and strange appetites, it seems to me, for the type of society that they will accept or want to live in, so to speak. I mean, people who are satisfied that, you know, the way we're doing it now in North America is 100% the best way ever, and we're the greatest, you know, history making the greatest times ever, or something like that. I think, yeah. You know, there's some people who would say support that, but I think there's lots of room for growth and change. I've benefited from living here, you know, in so many different ways. And at the same time, having lived here for so many years, I also see, yeah, when people say things can improve, there's many ways things can improve here.
Oh yeah, you know what I see is that what I think about is, I always use that analogy about a near corn, you know, that creates 500 kernels, and you put those 500 kernels in the ground, and they grow 500 more ears with each 500 kernels. You do the math on that, and that's nature's abundance. I mean, it is so abundant, people can't believe it. But what happens is, and we grow so much corn and so much other different types of beans and things like that. I've seen whole mountains of grains, just, you know, wheat and other things, oats, you know, all just piled up rotting to keep the prices up.
Right.
And I look at that and I see all these people starving, you know, all around the world, and I see what how abundant we really are, and all this lack is manufactured. There really is no reason for anybody to starve or not have a home. You know, you look at 90%, the latest figures they're looking at right now, about 90% of our taxes go to the military and to fund all these wars and all this other endless nonsense. You know, that's 90%. What if you just took 10% of that and put it towards homeless? It'd be over. You know, you wouldn't have homeless. You wouldn't have poverty. You wouldn't have people starving. You could end all this nonsense with a small fraction of that money. So peace has its dividends. And, you know, we could totally, you know, restore America. We could rebuild America, rebuild the infrastructure here, feed the hungry, you know, house the homeless, provide, you know, all of the medical needs for everybody, which is just a small percentage of that budget. But we've got to get our priorities in order and hold, you know, all the institutions accountable, you know, for their participation in this nonsense that's going on now. And that seems to be what's happening. You know, it seems to be where we're going.
So as you say, I mean, there's immense resources and there's terrible mismanagement of what we do have, and there's competing philosophies, you know, amongst the worst being the depopulation advocates, who want to get to some kind of equilibrium number of, you know, X number of people on the planet only, which is significantly fewer than we have now. People question, you know, these mass radiation poisonings and so on as possible global depopulation attempts. In terms of there is so much innovation, there is so much good science and good crop management and other, you know, systems management things in place around agriculture globally. The world's bounty is stupendous, and it's higher civilizations observing us see the imbalance where those huge numbers suffer for inadequate nourishment. When there was no shortage of the resource other than its artificial shortage, terrible piracy. I mean, the bounty. If you thought that the resources here belonged more than, you know, as creation was created, you know, before contract law came into place. I mean, people have a common heritage in this place. You know, common. Sense of common resources here. We have a global family. You know, we don't isolate members from access to resources. We think how terrible it is, these wars that are being prosecuted, and how they're affecting good works in different societies. I mean, people have a lot of terrible things to say about Gaddafi, but that water system, that national water system those people had, was because of his efforts, and certainly he did, at least that was something good that person did. And the fact that that's been, I don't know how effectively, but it's been bombed in this recent war. Mm-hmm. Shows, you know, such terrible disregard, you know, for how to say it, high profile and noteworthy international efforts. I mean, it's a standing model. I heard many good things about Libyan society, not having visited there or lived there. I can't say firsthand, but I heard many good things about the availability of education and housing, mm-hmm. and the government. You know, that Gaddafi's government had guaranteed many things to his people. So, I'm sorry, James.
I said, and he made good on them, you know, as far as the housing and the cars and the vehicles for each family and all the other things. He made good on his promises, which is, I must say, you know, who are we to tell them, you know, how to run their country when we're not even living up to, you know, a lot of the promises that, you know, our leaders are making.
Well, this is the thing. I the statistics that I read with regards to all these quality of life issues that were being addressed there, they said that it was very highly ranked on the list of the world's countries on certain metrics. That Libya was a desirable place to live for the people who live there. They were getting it pretty good on an international scale. So a lot of bad, terrible things have been said about Libya, and a lot of bad history even in the last 50 years. And, you know, I don't pretend to be an expert on it, but I just think that these for-profit type wars are they show utter contempt, you know, for the growth and development of civilization, from burning libraries in Iraq and you know, destroying waterworks in Libya. It's not mm-hmm. it's not a sign of progress whatsoever. It's not progressive, and you know.
No.
Yeah, it's, who was it? Someone had, you know, Facebook of all places. Where, you know, I, like many people, spend a bit too much time. But I read one of my in my flow. Somebody had put up a post of President Eisenhower talking about how the capital of countries or nations are spent who are heavily engaged in warfare. And he was talking about the intellectual capital of the careers of the scientists, like people who are brilliant inventors, potential inventors, and innovators. And all of their intellectual capital was absorbed in the work, the paid work, which was, you know, let's say, weapons development. So mm-hmm. all of these different resources that could be flowing into building the better society and so on, are not, you know, the life force is being flowed completely in these other directions. And President Eisenhower considered that an obstruction to progress. You know, that's how I
think. Oh, yeah.
His words. Yeah. So, yeah, these...
Pretty much it is.
Yeah, these costs, you know, it takes a lot of ambition to pursue an alternative path in a culture where that, you know, where the waves are flowing, you know, one way and you're feeling your inner motivation is taking you in a different direction. It takes a lot of stamina to walk the path and to be able to, you know, to hold fast and do some constructive work. But it's the only way things get done. And if these present generations can't interpret, you know, so the divine frequencies of knowledge that, you know, that are within and without the whole universe. If they can't get their compasses set on these good values and good ideals, then, you know, when will it be the time, you know, the people will take the reins? I'm very hopeful, though. I hope that the people who are showing, you know, vigor in taking stands on issues in society to, you know, to galvanize society to reach, you know, constructive goals. So people are showing a lot of courage, and I hope that at least some good objectives are met through these efforts. And I'm certainly watching this story at the Occupy Wall Street and the other initiatives that are taking place. I'm paying a lot of attention to the story. It's affecting a lot of people.
Yeah, I found it really interesting when the Fox News group got Batten. You know, they pulled out their nightsticks and started beating them up and pepper spraying them as well. And, you know, I thought that was pretty interesting that these other facets, the need to control and dominate are so out of control that they're actually shooting themselves in the foot because, you know, at one time they had control of the media and now they're beating the media up and pepper spraying them. And you know, this is going to backfire on them. You know, it always does. But, you know, just the things. I know Rockefeller donated something $1 million to the New York police to clean up the square, you know. And
JP Morgan.
Hire a thousand. Yeah, I was JP Morgan, yeah. Was it JP Morgan?
Yeah, I saw those numbers.
What's that?
Well, maybe Rockefellers were involved, too. I saw a story about JP Morgan, and I think $4.8 million was promised to the New York police for them to protect.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. But yeah, I mean, these guys, and so they really think they're gonna buy their way out of this one or get enough enforcement in there. And then a lot of the U.S. military are saying, well, wait a second, we're going to join this march, too, to make sure the police don't get out of hand. So it's going to get really interesting there. I think it's going to escalate to a point where there are so many people involved and so many people saying enough's enough that it's just, I don't care how many millions of dollars they throw at it and how many troops they put on it, it's not going to be enough. I mean, people are going to be heard and they're going to, you know, there's a movement going on and the more they do to suppress it, the stronger it's going to get, the bigger it's going to get. And that's with all truth. You know, the more you try to suppress it, it's like a pressure cooker. You just keep pressurizing it until it all blows up in your face.
very true. You know, and people say, not everybody likes Fox News. You know, some people say some terrible things about the way Fox covers news, but they do produce some good segments. It's true. And those local reporters, I thought, you know, showed courage under fire to be, you know, taking the worst end of that, you know, at the protests. So good for those reporters to show their determination to get the story and to be on, you know, to be providing coverage for what's turning out to be an important event.
Yeah, I know the real coverage is coming over shows like these and other shows as well. You know, I've just been blown away at some of the programs that they're trying to instill in their last efforts to maintain control. It's like death throes or a last grasp at power. You know, we're watching these moves and these new laws and the things that they're putting on the books, which are so beyond ridiculous. You know, if you can tell, if these guys had their way, we'd all be eating GMO food. You know, we'd all be sterilized, you know, through those foods and through all the other things they're giving us. We'd have a very short lifespan. You know, we'd all be put on timers, and we'd all be vaccinated with God knows what, you know, full of mercury, full of everything else. And you know, they're trying to make all this stuff mandatory. And then you look at all the raids for just drinking wholesome milk. I mean, you know, that's a crime now. And you know, it just goes on and on and on. It's gotten beyond ridiculous. You know, I saw an article the other day. It kind of broke my heart, but they forced vaccinated this woman's kid, and the first kid got autism from the vaccination, and the woman saying, "You will not have my other daughter. You're not going to vaccinate my daughter. Look what happened to my other child." And they actually ripped the kid out of her hands and vaccinated the daughter, and the daughter, same thing, got deathly ill, ended up with autism, you know, and actually the judge ruled in their favor. So basically, you see acts like this, and I just go, what have we become? You know, what happened to humanity? I mean, this is the most inhuman nonsense just to make a buck off these vaccines that they're doing. And the consequences of these actions. I mean, where's the humanity, you know, in these people? And I think that's the big question now. And I think, and that's what's created, you know, a huge rise to the revolution is that they're seeing that, you know, these TSA, these Homeland Security people, the FDA, all these other things, they've lost their humanity. They've lost all concept of what it means to be a human, and I think that's all going to backfire.
Yeah, I think that good people are morally outraged in the face of different kinds of inhumanity that you're describing, and so mm-hmm. It's natural that they step forward and seek dramatic changes. You can't keep provoking. In nature, you can't provoke and provoke and provoke without getting some kind of response.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah. So the collective consciousness of society is also like, it's like playing games with nature too. You know, you provoke and you provoke, you get away with it, you get away with it. And then that was the last time.
Yeah. It's like running around with a pea shooter. I always say, you know, going after the UFOs, we send our best technology to shoot them down. You know, things like that. And the other things that these guys are doing. It's almost like, you know, taking a pea shooter and going out after a lion. You know, you might get a few shots off and provoke the lion, but eventually he's going to go, "What the hell?" and turn around and swat you. You know, you might lose an arm, a leg, or your whole life. You know, who knows? But what I've seen is that we have, you know, the powers that be have provoked the lion to the point where the lion is awakening and I know David Icke uses that a lot, you know where he has the logo of the lion and it says, "Humans, get off your knees and roar," you know. And I think the roar is here and the roar is coming, and a lot of people are realizing that that they aren't sheep, that they're God beings actually, or lions. You know, there's a lion within everybody waiting to come forward.
Yeah, those Narahari Narasingha lions. People get in their photographs. That inner, you know, the great inner spirit, you know, the noble spirit, the leadership, the spirit of leadership that comes. You know, at a time of difficulty, sometimes people's talents are awakened. You know, through a crisis, and so people are mm-hmm. challenged in new ways. New qualities and maybe good virtues will come out of people's strengths. You know, leaders will be born out of difficult circumstances. Mm-hmm. Maybe those leaders will be good for society.
Oh, definitely. You know, I know the challenges I've been experiencing, it's been very empowering. And, you know, it hasn't been fun. You know, a lot of it I didn't even want to deal with. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. And I wanted to live in my own little bubble. But, you know, unfortunately, my own little bubble seemed to have a lot of people trying to pop it. And so eventually I had to deal with the bubble poppers, you know. And, you know, so it's interesting, but it has been a very empowering and educational ordeal. And I wouldn't have done it if they wouldn't have tried to pop my bubble about 100 times in a row, you know. So.
Well, this is the thing, as you said, but you know you've been on a good path because of the thorns under your feet. You have evidence that there are many.
Yeah. Yeah, the old saying, you know, pioneers take the most arrows, you know, or, you know, if you're over the target, you're going to get flak. And obviously, you know, we are right on target, and we're on the forefront of this. But, you know, the way I feel right now, I'm just like an insignificant number in the big scheme of things, because what the forces behind that are coming in, it's almost like a lot of us have poked enough holes in the dam that it's inevitable. You know, it's kind of bust loose, and there's nothing they can do to repair it. And there's a flood coming, you know, now all we have to do is get ready to go with the flow, because you know it's pretty much over for the old program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you know, there is lots of change. I think people on all levels of society can be the people of the future. That there's different choices that have to be made. You know, some people are going to, you know, some people are going to ascend in their status. Other people are going to lose their status. But you know, even in our relatively, you know, quote unquote stable society, we see that people's careers come and go. I mean, there's even I just read a story about 9 sheriffs who were calling for the resignation of the Attorney General Eric Holder over mm-hmm. the gun running operation into Mexico that resulted in one of the border agents being shot. So, so even, you know, even at the very high ranks of justice, there's apparently, you know, tremendous instability. And you know, again, through this, you know, new leaders can emerge, you know, in these times, as in any times, but the society as it is, you know, shows inherent instability. So, who's to say that the instability of change and transformation could be any worse? You know, possibility of change could be liberating. A number mm-hmm. of different levels, and you know, we're all compelled to ultimately. You know, nothing stays the same in this world. You know, we're going to grow and develop. You know, we can grow and develop in like, you know, a very slow pace, or we can have very adventurous lives with many, you know, different facets of experience. And I hope that, you know, this upcoming year catalyzes a lot of, you know, a lot of good potential in people, that, you know, people who are working hard towards higher ideals. I hope that people continue to achieve good things in the coming year in the face of which, as you described, it will be huge social change.
Mm-hmm. I think we're getting a lot of help on high, and the more we initiate that help and do our own inner work, you know, and rise to the occasion, the more that help can come in. You know, and I think it is so important that we all make our own personal, whatever you want to call it, God, creator, spirit connection, and start treating others, you know, honor and respect that omnipresent God within everyone and everything, and despite their beliefs or religions or you know, we have to transcend all cultural and religious boundaries and get back into that unity consciousness and seeing, you know, the Creator and everyone and everything, and then everything will get right, you know, on the world again. And I always like to end with that old Cherokee saying, if it isn't good for everyone, it isn't good. It's simple. You know, but anyway, we're out of time. So why don't you go ahead and give your website so, you know, people can go ahead and check out a lot of the footage that you filmed here and any way they can get a hold of you if they want to do their own personal counseling or anything else you have to offer.
There's all kinds of different information on my website, which is yourinnervoice.com. Yourinnervoice.com is information on personal consultations, my column, video channels, lots of great stuff there. So if you'll visit my website or call me toll-free if you want to talk about personal development issues, spiritual development issues, UFO contact issues, you can call me at 1-888-453-0751. That's 1-888-453-0751. Thank you so much for having me on your show, James. Great to be with you.
All right. Well, Jim, thanks for coming on the show, and thank everybody else there. I don't know who else is around, but thank them for hanging out and coming on the show. And I guess we're out of time, so I'll be signing off. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, signing off our first two-hour show. I hope everybody enjoyed the show, and you know, be sure and tune in again. I'm sure we're going to have another awesome show next Saturday at 8 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Anyway, have a good evening.